This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I got a feeling that tonight's gonna be a good night.
Give us your thoughts. 48 hours. You get into Chicago. Last night you meet up with Kyle Davidson. You're asked, should I play? You say, absolutely, put me on that net. I think Hawk fans know what kind of confidence you have and what kind of presence you have in that net.
Yeah. I want to play. And our goal is to win here. It's not our first place or last place. We're going to go to winning hockey at some point. And that's what we're working towards.
Spencer, well said. Welcome to Chicago, my friend.
Thank you.
Welcome to Chicago, Spencer Knight. Good morning, Chicago. Happy birthday. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. That was Darren Pang welcoming Spencer Knight to the city and the Blackhawks last night after the victory by the Hawks over the Kings, where Spencer Knight was phenomenal in his debut. Thank you to CHSN for that audio there. 41 saves in his first game in a Blackhawks sweater, was still wearing the helmet he had from Florida, from the Panthers, his head spinning a little bit, but he was steady in goal. 6'4" tall, a big goaltender, and yet, as Panger described throughout the broadcast, if you watched it, and I did, he's very agile. He's very flexible. He's really good going. He's a big goalie with a lot of flexibility and great reaction, and he is the goaltender of the future.
Nimble.
Yes, he's nimble.
6'4", nimble, not always in the same sentence, but he moves really well. It's fun to watch.
And Kyle Davidson has to be nimble because the trade deadline is March 7th. That's Friday. And you wonder who is next or what else they can do. Because like so many teams, too many teams in this city, the Hawks are still in the midst of a total rebuild. They have gutted it out. The roster, Seth Jones, who now is a Florida Panther, a happy Florida Panther, he is the last residue of the Stan Bowman regime. He was the guy that Stan Bowman traded for and then signed to that mega contract, which became an albatross. So now you're starting over. Kyle Davidson has had 8 first-round draft picks in the last 3 years. He's got 2 this season, 2 this summer, and 2 next summer. I wonder, when we talk about the Bulls and we look at tankathon.com, and we talk about whether their losses are really wins because it brings them closer to Cooper Flagg. You look at the Blackhawks, they're second in the tankathon.com standings. They've got a 13.5% chance of getting the number one overall pick. They're right in the midst of that. The Bulls are in the midst of that. The White Sox, we just heard from Bob Nightingale, likely to lose 100 or so more games this year. Of those 3 teams that are bottoming out to climb back, which one do you think is closer to the playoffs?
Wow, throwing that one at me. It feels like things can turn around quicker in hockey. And I don't really have any facts to back that up.
How much do you like hockey?
Well, listen, I love hockey. I think I grew up in St. Louis. I shouldn't remind the Chicago people that.
Just remind people, you are who you are. I grew up in St. Louis. Big deal.
Love hockey. I spent time in New England where I covered the Bruins Stanley Cup run where they played my Chicago Blues. And that, I think, was really the just solidifying why I love the sport. Obviously, moving to South Florida, watching the Florida Panthers rise into, you know, kind of turn that place into a hockey town for a period of time there. I left before they won the cup, but they were, I was there for the building blocks of mm-hmm. that process, which was really cool to see. I love hockey. I think, obviously, we do our show now. It's very football focused. So I do kind of think, you know, I'm sort of transitioning into a more football focused world, but I love the sport. And I think Four Nations was a great reminder for people in Chicago who maybe feel like they don't have anything really great to root for or look forward to. It's just a reminder of why you love the sport. And I love hockey.
I do think the Hawks of the three teams have reason to believe they have more of a foundation, I think, than the Bulls or the White Sox. Maybe a more clearer direction, if that's the way to put it. Because they have a franchise player. The White Sox have franchise foundational pieces in terms of young pitching. They want to build around those young pitchers and make the pitching staff their foundation. The Bulls, frankly, I don't know what they are and where they're headed. I do think they're going in circles. They have kind of declared a lane, and technically they are closest to the playoffs because they're going to be in the play-in in all likelihood. Does that count? Maybe, sort of, kind of. That describes also their direction. They maybe kind of, sort of, declared a lane. So I don't know that they have as clear of a direction as the Blackhawks. And this sounds silly to now because they have been so bad for so many years now. But they have Connor Bedard, and he is the key. As much as we love Spencer Knight and his debut, as much as you like Frankie Nazar and him being one of the best rookies in the NHL since January, it's all about Connor Bedard and unlocking him and surrounding him with talent. So this trade for Spencer Knight is important, but the Blackhawks have the most hope because they feel like they have Bedard, but you got to get him going. That's the key to everything. He's the key to everything.
100%. And you imagine that there will be, you know, obviously there's an interim coach. You imagine there will be a new coach that can turn things around if needed. And I think the franchise piece of Connor Bedard is very exciting, but to have the pieces like Frankie Nazar and Spencer Knight also there just kind of solidify, like, okay, there's something brewing here. Whereas I think when you look at the White Sox and the Bulls, relative to the sport that they play in, like, Modest Buzelis is very exciting and Bulls fans should be thrilled about it. But I think everyone knows that you can't win a championship in the NBA without, like, a big three. You know, like, it's pretty much, they're still very much far away from that. And the willingness to spend is so much more important in those other two sports than it is in hockey.
312-644-6767. Who is the team that you feel is on the verge of something despite all the losing? Because there's been a lot of losing. We mentioned those three because you tend to think of those three teams in a cluster. They're on the Chicago Sports Network. They kind of have business interests that are shared as well. But you look at the Bears, which everybody can relate to, and we talk about the Bears more than any other team in town. They're about to embark on free agency. They have paid the head coach. Now they have reason to believe that in the NFL, where it's easier to bounce back from season to season, they have reason to believe that they're starting a playoff push under Ben Johnson. I think it's a realistic expectation. I think they're closer to the playoffs than any of the three teams that we just mentioned.
Yeah.
And the Cubs are closer to a championship than any team in town.
And don't you feel like the NFL, there's what's so exciting and cool about the NFL is the parity and how you can go from worst to best in a snap of a fingers. Like, I just think, like, you look at the Washington Commanders. Like, that was such a great example of why the NFL is so exciting and so unpredictable every single year. So I think that's why there's always this, like, hopeless romantic, hopeless, you know, sort of like optimism around the Chicago Bears every year. It's like, oh, this year it's going to be Caleb Williams that does the difference. This year it's going to be Ben Johnson that does the difference. And you just play that game.
Well, much like the Blackhawks, when I said it's hard to see, and it sounds maybe somewhat absurd to say they are closer to being a championship level contender or organization than the other two teams referenced. It's a low bar, I understand. But when you have a star player to build around, like Bedard in the Blackhawks case, like Caleb Williams in the Bears case, now he you can two things can be true. He fell short of expectations, yes, as a rookie. But he also gives you the biggest reason to believe that they have a viable shot at doing what you just described, bouncing back in one season and being this year's example of the Washington Commanders.
Yeah. You know, and you look at what flipped the Commanders. It was a really good coach and a really good quarterback. You hope that that's the situation that Chicago now finally has. They didn't get to do it in the same year, but now they'll have the opportunity to have a good coach put together, paired with a quarterback with a lot of promise.
Some good text coming in. It's 708. It's also a lot less pieces to win in hockey than baseball. 224. Hey, David, you're missing your Chicago Cubs after this year when they don't make the playoffs again and they blow everything up. You should include them in the mix with these other teams. Okay. 262. Go get Mitch Marner, and I'm really excited about the Blackhawks. Me too. You go get Mitch Marner, and then that changes a lot of things at the United Center. Then 773, familiar refrain from Bears fans. Can we just get a winning record first from the Bears before you start talking about the playoffs?
Yeah, I'm there. That's where I am. It's just learn how to win first. And if you make the playoffs, amazing. You know, but there's just still a part of me, and I've talked about this before, but I think when Matt Eberflus was let go, you sort of realized, and you know, they go to San Francisco and they play that game and you're like, oh, they could get the bump, and they get absolutely blown out and embarrassed in San Francisco. I think you saw how far away that roster was in that moment. It kind of like brought you back down to earth about the Chicago Bears and how many holes there were on that team. And to Matt Eberflus's credit, I think he masked a lot of those holes in many ways. Obviously, he couldn't close the game, but he was keeping them close.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you sort of lost a somewhat competent head coach, you saw how far away that team was from being good and how broken maybe the locker room was and culture, et cetera.
Do you think Matt Eberflus was a somewhat competent head coach?
I do.
In retrospect?
Yeah, somewhat competent. Yeah, absolutely. I think he held that locker room together. I think what you look at what he did in his second season, obviously it ended so, it was so broken and hard to watch towards the end of it, but he kept a lot of, there was a reason that the Bears were in a lot of those games.
They just couldn't close the
deal.
They
just couldn't close it. And that's
but how
a
do you explain
huge part of the job.
Why the players were so against him, as it appears they were,
yeah,
according to the NFLPA rankings.
Right. No, I mean, I think that you saw it unravel at, when he kept, you know, it unraveled in Washington. And then when they show up in Arizona and, or don't show up in Arizona, and then it just kind of all spirals from there. You have a close game against Green Bay. You have the Detroit game. Like, it just was so ugly and so hard to watch. I think he lost the locker room. But don't forget, like, they had a chance to tie the game in Detroit on Thanksgiving. Like, that's
yes,
what's unbelievable about how bad the Bears looked at some points. And then also thinking about the fact that they had a chance to beat Green Bay at home. They had a chance to tie the game in Detroit. Like, they were competetive.
773. The Bears don't have a great quarterback, though.
So well, we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. Yeah,
we're going to find out. And that's a little scary.
So we talked about this a little bit on the Big Pro Football Show on Monday night on CHSN about what the Bears accomplished at the Combine. And it's one thing to go into the weeds and talk about, well, they evaluated, you know, they measured Will Campbell's arms and they're going to be able to pick him at 10th. They heard from Tyler Booker, the guard from Alabama, and he sounds really cool. All those things are things we'll continue to look at before the draft. But I really believe that as much as anything, they restored some credibility to the organization. And I think when Ben Johnson spoke, people listened, and he will definitely change the tenor and the tone and the perception of the Bears if he hasn't already. And that matters. That matters in free agency. That matters in the draft. That matters in terms of how people view you on a daily basis. And I do think that to some degree, the combine was about this theme of 2025, if you will, about the Bears are back. And Ben Johnson is the biggest reason why. But if they are indeed going to be that team, if they are indeed back, they've got to win more than they lose. They've got to be a winning team. They can't have any of this more hope and promise from a losing team and they're on the way.
And I think Ben Johnson has earned that because of what he did in Detroit, that there's just going to automatically be a buy-in from players. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in free agency. Like, does the Ben Johnson effect bring in free agents? And same with Caleb Williams, right? Like, does that duo excite really good free agents and make them want to come play in Chicago for an organization that, you know, hasn't won a Super Bowl in you all know how long? So it's just, okay, everyone's mad at me for calling him a somewhat competent head coach.
Not everyone.
All the texters.
Not everyone.
I didn't say he's...
I didn't call you out on that because of that.
No. Listen, he was a very good defensive coach. He's a good coach.
Yes.
Like, he's a first of all, a wonderful man. And players loved him for a long time. I think when there was the inability to finish games, it would be hard for anyone to sort of get up in the morning or show up to a stadium and believe that you were going to win a game. I get that. Do I think there needed to be a change for a head coach at Hallis Hall? Yes, I do. I don't disagree with that. But he was somewhat competent. And that's what I was saying. I didn't say he was competent.
The way that I would put it most regularly, and I think trying to be tactful and somewhat diplomatic, is that as a head coach, he was a very good defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Some people just aren't cut out to be, or ideally, head coach material. It's a different set of skills. And I don't think that they suited Matt Eberflus as well as calling defensive signals, being the play caller, and relating to players. He does that pretty well. And he's going to do that very well, I think, in Dallas. He did that well before he came to Chicago. Being a head coach just required him to do too many things that were outside of his strengths, that were beyond his capability, and I think you saw the results of that.
Exactly.
Let's go to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Dan is on the road. Dan, welcome to Mullion Haw.
Hey, first-time caller. Thanks. Great to be here. Love the show. Listen all the time.
Thank you.
When we're thinking about the teams, the three teams mentioned that are closest to the playoffs, my biggest concern, and I'll just make this comment and let you discuss it, is there's a common denominator in who the owner is. And I feel like it's a race to the middle if we're lucky with those teams.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate the phone call. There's no doubt the skepticism and reaction to Jerry Reinsdorf. He's polarizing as any owner in town. That's why the Justin Ishbia story had so much momentum a couple weeks ago, or was that last week, I believe, and the thought of Justin Ishbia swooping in to buy up shares and one day be the owner of the White Sox, why that had as much momentum as it had. White Sox fans are desperate for some change that represents a little bit of hope. We'll see where that story goes. I don't know where that story is headed, but it did provide some very intriguing details, because you don't just pull out of a potential purchase of the Minnesota Twins if you don't have designs on doing something bigger and bolder, perhaps in Chicago.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a polarizing figure that can make or break the future of an organization. It's been very clear, and I think you can make that argument about many teams in the city. But I also think that that's not the end all be all, and it's also maybe why you have the most hope for the Blackhawks.
Back to the phone lines. John is in Palatine. John, welcome to Mullion Haw. Go ahead, John.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
Doing well. How are
Great,
you?
Great, thank you.
All right. Hey, how? I've been in this town a long time, and this town makes me sick, man, for being the third largest TV package in this country. Why are we always the one on the bad side of the field with these teams, man? It's sickening, man. I've been a White Sox fan. I grew up on the South Side. I'm tired of these guys. Got the worst and the worst freaking and the worst freaking in the worst freaking division, and both nationally and nationally, and we can't win crap. We constantly chasing small market teams year in and year out. The Bulls, They can't figure it out because they're a bunch of idiots over here, man. And we're waiting for the Cubs to figure it out with Richter, and these guys playing small ball. Hey, man, can we get somebody to play some big ball in this town for once in our damn life? It was just a sickness.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the phone call. Understand your frustration. Is there any way to talk about Chicago on its 188th birthday? Really? Happy birthday, Chicago. John wants none of it. It's tough. It's tough being a sports fan in this city, especially lately. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, you heard it in John's voice. You hear it in everybody's voice. Every Monday morning for 10 straight weeks as the Bears' losing streak dragged on. You hear it in Sox fans' voices every morning that Mully's here. You hear it in Hawks fans and everybody. There's a shared frustration. It's probably what unites people in Chicago as much as anything. If you are a sports fan, you're waiting for something big to happen. Don't know if it'll be this year. 2025? Maybe the Cubs. We'll see. Maybe the Bears. Probably not. The other three? Good luck. All right, we'll come back. We'll take it out to Arizona. Bruce Levine is there. He'll tell us what's going on with the Cubs and the White Sox next. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. Time now to go out to the Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. It's where you find the Score's baseball expert, Bruce Levine. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning to both of you. I'm doing great. It's a little cool here in the desert, but no one's going to want to hear that it's only 55 or 60 degrees in
Boo-hoo.
Arizona.
Boo-hoo.
Cry me a river, Bruce.
Bruce, exactly. Those chilly temperatures, how will they affect PCA's hamstring? What's going on with PCA?
We'll find out in about 40 minutes exactly what's going on with PCA. Game time, we got a message from the Cubs Media Relations yesterday that PCA was scratched from the lineup with tightness in the right hamstring. That's all we know about it at this point in time. It was precautionary, underlined by the Media Relations Department. And, you know, they do such a good job of trying to keep everything as accurate as possible. So. Mm-hmm. You know, people at home are going to freak out when they hear hamstring, PCA. There's nothing more important to Pete Crow Armstrong and the Cubs than Pete Crow Armstrong's legs. Let's face it. I mean, that's the athlete in there. That's the great center fielder. That's the guy that can steal 50 bases. So we'll find out more today. Again, they said precautionary tightness, not a strain at this point. That's, you know, apples and oranges right now.
I know that's, you don't have all the information quite yet, Bruce, but is there any indication that this could keep him away from Tokyo?
It's a great question, Ruthie, and one that came to my head right away, the idea that it's Pete Crow Armstrong. So even if it's tightness, how long is prudent to keep him on the sideline to make sure the leg is not barking, and the idea that going forward he's going to be 100%. So there doesn't have to be a tear or a strain, which is the same thing actually, of any magnitude at all to be cautious with your number one center fielder and another important player on this team. So from that perspective, we'll find out more from Craig Counsell in a couple hours about how they look at it. It's, you know, it's a big story because we don't know much about it right now.
Bruce, it brings to mind the question you posed maybe a couple weeks ago. Who is the Cubs' backup center fielder, and what do they do if Pete Crow Armstrong is at any point during the season, not just now or maybe to begin it, but what kind of depth do they have? Yesterday we saw Suzuki in left field. Does that mean Ian Happ in center is your best possible alternative? What will they do if Pete Crow Armstrong does miss any time throughout the year?
Well, Kevin Alcantara is the name, and he's the young 5-tool player that they're bringing along the organization. I think he's 2 or 3 ranked in the organization right now. He's the best defensive player on the 40-man roster as far as center field goes. They're not moving Tucker. They're not moving Happ. During a game, they might. You know, one day they might. But a permanent solution at this time on the 40-man roster is Kevin Alcantara. Waiver wires, all kinds of things happening within the next 3 weeks, looking at other teams and bringing someone else in. But at this point in time, when you look at the 40-man, and I've asked this question from day one here. I talked to Jed Hoyer about it. I talked to Council about it. Alcantara is the best center fielder, and he would be the guy that went.
Bruce, David has a little bit of a love affair going right now with Gage Workman. We've been talking about him a lot. Want to know what your thoughts are on getting to know him as a player, as a person, on and off the field.
Well, he's been terrific in camp. I caution everybody this time of year in spring training, and that is when you're not facing top flight pitchers at their best, you know, you don't know exactly the ability to make consistent contact all the time and be the player that they assume you are. But in this case, you know, he had a really nice hit off of Burns, one of the best pitchers in baseball yesterday. He's shown a lot of power, versatility, playing the infield and outfield. His best position, Council thinks, is third base, a left-handed bat. Former switch hitter, switched last year to just left-handed. The Cubs were the, got the benefit, rather, of Detroit, who is flush with infielders and had to expose him to the Rule 5 draft. Their intent is to keep him and make him a part of the team. With a young third baseman in Shaw who bats right-handed, Workman would fit in beautifully. Again, if he doesn't make your team, you have to offer him back to Detroit for the waiver cost. There is no sending him directly to the minor league. So either makes it here or he's offered back. He won't make it through waivers.
Ruthie's kind of overstating it. I do like his start. I don't know. I love the player, but it's a good, promising beginning. And you make a good point, Bruce. I mean, you have to give him back if he doesn't make the team. But boy, you look at the roster construction and the projections, he's going to have a hard time making this team.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's really, you're right, David, that last spot on the team. And this is a team that had, you know, as we talked about before, I've beaten this to death, one of the worst benches in baseball last year. Okay? It just was. You know, all the guys were great guys. They played their butts off. They weren't all that good. This time around, now you have Turner as a backup first baseman, possibly backup third baseman, doubtful, but DH. Then you have Bruhan, who they're playing at short and second base. Then you have Birdie, and then you have Nicky Lopez. This will be a tough decision for the Cubs, and it's a really good thing to show that they have depth in the backups. Normally, we don't talk that much about backups. In this case, it's a really important part, and it might be a part of a platoon. We don't know if Shaw will face every pitcher in baseball. Workman would be a nice alternative, playing third base, batting left-handed.
With the comment about Shaw, what's the outlook for him? And, you know, obviously whether or not he makes it to Japan is a big question mark too, right?
Yeah, he certainly wants to go, Ruth. He stated, hey, I can get all my work in there. The reality is they have four games there, 8 days off, including those games there. So, therefore, what's the prudent thing to do? Is it more important for him to work here in the backfields, work on his arm angle, throwing from third base, which is the biggest hurdle that he has here in spring training going forward, to make that throw from third base position? He hasn't played all that much, and the angles there. Is it more prudent to keep him here working out rather than going to Japan and missing at least one complete day and probably two or three more just from jet lag coming back? I think we know practically what the answer is. But again, the Cubs do not want to take away that carrot in front of Matt Shaw right now to say he's not going. I would say it's a smart thing to do. But again, it's you know, it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing for a Major League Baseball player to be able to go to Japan, start the season with two storied teams right now. So they're being, you know, they're taking baby steps to make this decision.
So, Bruce, over the White Sox camp in Glendale, Mike Tauchman homered yesterday. So did Luis Robert Jr., his second of the spring. But Tauchman especially, where do you see him batting in this batting order, and how many games do you think he ends up playing? He's got to be their everyday right fielder, correct? Is that something that you think is a role he can handle?
I don't think so, David. I mean, I think he's going to play a lot. But I think the plan with Mike is, boy, we have a really good professional hitter and player here in Mike Tauchman. But at 34, I think his role is 350, 400 at-bats, you know, certainly playing against right-handed pitching, DHing, playing the outfield, those type of things. You really want to break in a young outfielder. You want your young outfielders to have a chance to be doing something. Now, you know, is it Dominic Fletcher? Does Colas finally make the team after being touted for so long? Is it more of a veteran guy like Slater? Again, with Benintendi out, I think you're going to see him get a lot of at-bats. But they need to keep moving along some of their young outfielders and bringing them to the major leagues. So we might see a lot of fluid movement with the White Sox and their outfield this year.
All right, Bruce, appreciate your time. We got to run. We have Mike Florio coming up, but we really appreciate your time out in Arizona. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right. Have a great day.
Bruce Vine out in Arizona on the Cubs and Sox beat for the score. Not great news on Colson Montgomery front because he still has back spasms. Curious to see when he comes back. But it's still early, relatively early. 2 weeks away for the Cubs, but 3 weeks away for the White Sox. So plenty of time to get him back into the lineup and get him healthy again. All right, we come back. Mike Florio talked to us about the NFL. Big week in the National Football League ahead of NFL free agency. Ruth Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
So we can't beat, beat!
We can't beat, beat!
Won't beat, beat!
What's happening to
Gator? NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in for Mully today. Time to go now to the Score Hotline. Brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. We love our weekly visit with Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
What's going on? How's everybody today?
Doing well. Waiting that 3 o'clock deadline, wondering what the Vikings are going to do. Sam Darnold's future, does it hang in the balance? What do you expect the news to be?
Well, I've been working on this a good bit over the past few days. I don't think anybody really knows what the Vikings are going to do. And one of the things I've picked up is folks on the outside who deal with the Vikings aren't really sure who's calling the shots. And I was surprised there was even any conversation about the Vikings using the franchise tag on Darnold, because head coach Kevin O'Connell, when he was making the rounds during Super Bowl week, he was on PFT Live, for example, he said Darnold has earned the right to become a free agent, which would imply they're not going to tag him. The fact that there's been some mystery about it speaks to the idea of some folks wonder who's really calling the shots there. So if they don't tag him, that means they don't want to pay him $40 million this year. Are they able to keep him for less than that? And then if they would sign him to a deal that essentially covers 2 years, what does that do for J.J. McCarthy? I think there's a chance McCarthy would say, if he's expected to sit on the bench for two more years, I want out. And one last point, no matter how well it went last year for Darnold, it's not going to be that easy this year. Last year, there was no McCarthy hovering if he had a bad game and the fans started clamoring for J.J. McCarthy. Last year, there were no expectations for Sam Darnold. This year, expectations high. McCarthy, if he doesn't get traded, would be on the sideline. One bad game, one bad drive, one bad throw. Darnold could be out. So I think the Vikings should just rip off the Band-Aid and go forward with McCarthy, and we'll see what they do. But if they don't tag him, that means he'll be a free agent and anyone else can sign him. just like last year when the Falcons signed Kirk Cousins away from Minnesota.
We've been having this debate, Mike, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, too, about Sam Darnold. Who needs who more? Do the Vikings need Sam Darnold more, or does Sam Darnold need the Vikings? I want to get your thoughts.
No, Darnold needs the Vikings more because Kevin O'Connell has proven that he can take any lump of clay and mold it into a successful NFL quarterback, at least for a while. The chariot does turn back into a pumpkin once there's enough film out there that defenses can see what O'Connell's doing with a guy like Josh Dobbs or Nick Mullins. But I think Darnold needs Minnesota, and I think it's going to be hard for Darnold to really cash in because other teams are going to say to his agent, at least, as part of the negotiating process, wait a minute. Your guy's success last year was because of O'Connell. There's a good chance he comes here and we can't do the same things O'Connell can do. And he might just have to go somewhere and prove for a year that he can play at a high level without O'Connell. And then next year, maybe he's in line for a big money deal. He's still young, even though it feels like he's been around forever. I don't think he's 28 yet. So a lot of years left for Sam Darnold, and he did have a great year, but he needs the Vikings more than the Vikings need him.
Mike, there are some reports out of Green Bay that the Packers have offered one of their receivers and a first-round pick to the Seahawks for DK Metcalf. Are the Seahawks shopping DK Metcalf, and might he land with the Packers?
Well, I don't know that they're shopping him, but if the Packers reach out and initiate conversations and the Seahawks like what they hear, then maybe you listen. Metcalf entering the last year of his contract. He's a guy, it's always felt like they haven't really developed the offense to get the most out of this freakish athlete that they have. I mean, they should be having jet sweeps and bubble screens. He's in the ball in his hands and let him go. Let him run over people or run past people. So it wouldn't surprise me if teams are talking. And the reality is this time of year, there's plenty of communications among plenty of teams about plenty of possibilities. Now, I saw some pushback from, I think, Matt Schneidman of The Athletic about the Metcalf Packers reporting, and it died down after that. So, you know, the Combine is a place where everyone's together and deals can get done. Now, it doesn't mean a deal won't get done, but I don't rule anything out because DK Metcalf isn't an untouchable player. There's only so many players in the NFL that would not be traded under any set of circumstances, and Metcalf is not one of those players.
Speaking of the Combine, Mike, I didn't expect one of the headlines to be about two reporters getting into a tiff about one Matt Stafford. I want to get your thoughts on what really did happen with Matt Stafford and Tom Brady in Montana.
Well, the Raiders and the Giants both were led to believe that Stafford was ready to leave the Rams. And they both put significant contract offers on the table. I've heard they both offered $100 million over 2 years. I haven't nailed that down with specificity. And this is the kind of fact that can be very elusive to confirm because it's never in writing, it's never signed, it's never official. But my understanding is $50 million a year on a two-year deal. Stafford ultimately stayed with the Rams. The details aren't out yet. Eventually they will be. I think it's going to be $40 million for 1 year with no real guarantees for 2026. I think that he just went through the motions of flirting with the Raiders and the Giants to get the Rams to pump up their number a little bit. And I think the Rams read him perfectly. The Rams knew he didn't want to leave. And I don't know this, but I've heard enough to make me think that this is plausible. They were at 36 before this all happened. After the Raiders and the Giants flirtation, they went to 40 and Stafford took it. And that would mean he never was going to leave. He never wanted to leave. This was just about getting a little bit more from the Rams and continuing a year-to-year relationship. Cousins last year in Minnesota didn't want the year-to-year relationship. He wanted to go somewhere with more security. Stafford could have gotten that this year. He opted to stay in LA for one more year, and we'll see what happens in 2026.
Mike, I'm not sure who won the Combine, but did anybody lose it?
Well, I don't know, because to me, like, the Combine is primarily an effort to bring all the players together to do mass medical evaluations. One CAT scan, one X-ray, one MRI, one whatever. So they're not glowing like the Incredible Hulk after going to 30 different teams and having all those procedures. And it's cheaper too. They don't care about the players being bombarded with radiation. They care about saving money. That's how it all started. The workouts became part of it because what the hell? We got him here anyway. The interviews, hey, we got him here anyway. I think that probably the guy who potentially lost the most is Abdul Carter, because when they poked and prodded, they found he has a stress reaction in his foot. He's not getting surgery on it, but that's the kind of thing that could cause questions about whether you roll the dice on him at the top of the draft and will he fall some. And we know that with every spot a guy falls, it's money that he loses on his rookie contract.
Mike, I know you had the chance to sit down with Ryan Poles at the Combine. I would love to hear your thoughts on what was the Bears' buzz over the course of last week.
Well, yeah, we also talked to Ben Johnson as well. We talked to him right after he was hired, and he sat with us for a while last week. Look, there's a lot of stuff going on this year that creates optimism, and then it's hard not to look at that and say, well, didn't we feel the same way last year, and look what happened last year? Maybe it's different this year, but I really do think they're laying the foundation to pivot toward a team that has a dynamic offense. They really haven't had a dynamic offense in the 50-plus years I've been following the NFL. Even when they had Walter Payton, they never developed the passing game to complement the fact that you had 11 guys on defense watching Walter Payton everywhere he went. The 85 Bears, yeah, you know, there were moments. That Monday night game against the Vikings, Jim McMahon's injured, he comes in, he throws a couple of touchdown passes, but that was all driven by the defense. If they could develop a dynamic high-end offense, that really would be something. And right now, it's kind of like, let's wait and see what happens. Let's see what they do in free agency. Let's see what they do in the draft. And let's ultimately see if Ben Johnson is one of the coordinators who, when it's time to go to the next level, and it's not quite flip a coin, but for the most part, maybe it is 50-50. Some guys can make it. Maybe it's less than 50-50. Some guys who were good coordinators make it as head coaches, and some guys don't. And the only way you find out is if you jump in and try to swim.
We only got about 30 seconds left, Mike. But what's this I see about Hard Knocks offseason? No longer in North Carolina and Bill Belichick? I already set my DVR. What's the deal?
Well, it's funny. I was hearing yesterday that it was off. And this goes back to something I heard in the aftermath of the announcement. I'm not sure the folks at NFL Films dotted every I and crossed every T on whether or not the owners would be okay with giving Bill Belichick a platform on NFL Films. And yada, yada, yada. Bill Belichick doesn't have a platform on NFL Films.
Wow.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Mike. Appreciate your time.
Right. Thanks, Mike.
Have a good week.
Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com with all the goods. That's interesting.
Interesting. I had not thought of that. I thought, you know, my first thought was maybe they wanted some access that Bill didn't want to give them.
Yeah, that's more likely, isn't
that
it?
That was my first thought, but that actually makes a lot of sense that the owners were like, this is an NFL show.
Yeah, I thought it was odd. An NFL show essentially featuring a college program.
The greatest NFL coach of all time.
Yeah, he's a college coach now, right?
Get out of town.
Well, that's Stacey Dales, maybe what she thinks. She was at the Combine. She owned it all week on the NFL Network. She will join us next on Mully and Haw. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.